Scioli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
We are live at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. Welcome back. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Scioli. Appreciate you being here today. Let's talk about some polls, shall we, as we get ready for night number one, where President Joe Biden's going to speak as he got the Monday night speaking slot. Oof, not a good look for the President of the United States of America, if you ask me. But let me welcome to the show Brent Buchanan. Brent Buchanan is my guest right now. Brent is the founder and president of Signal, which is a polling and analytics firm. Their perfect combination of technology, analytics, and voter targeting led the New York Times to name Signal the number one most accurate polling firm in 2018. In the same year, 538 and Signal, Signal was on the top of all the Republican polling firms, which was reconfirmed in 2020, with Signal calling the most races correct of any Republican shop in the nation. So there's a recent article that you wrote, What You're Not Hearing About Trump's Resilience Versus Harris, as told by a pollster. I should say an article that you're featured in. Brent, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So what's the key to your accuracy? Because a lot of people, I think, still have not figured that out, have gotten it right in terms of the industry.
Well, first off is don't lie. Don't make up numbers. That's the foundation. But in all honesty, it's based around the fact that people communicate in multiple different ways, and the last way they want to communicate is somebody call their cell phone. It's an annoyance to them. Mm-hmm. And so in 2010, when we started really getting into this space, we were kind of a full service political shop. And we realized that one day landlines are going to go away and the industry was going to have to transform, just like decades ago it transformed away from knocking people's doors and asking them survey questions. So our theory is throw it all at the wall. If people want to communicate through that medium, we'll communicate with them through that medium in order to gather their opinion. And we found that it has a lot less social desirability bias than live telephone agents. So, and again, I don't want to totally crap on that because we do use some live phones. There are certain segments of the population that you still can best reach through live phones. They're just a significant minority of the population. So that's our theory, is that if people want to use multiple channels to communicate, then we got to go through multiple channels to gather their opinions.
Do you think people lie to pollsters, Brent?
Well, so social desirability bias is that you say what you think the other person wants you to say. And in telephone interviews, there is, whether it's subconscious or not, there is that social desirability bias that somebody's answering in a way that they think that the agent is wanting them to respond. And that's where, especially in 2016, you got this phrase coined, the shy Trump voter.
Let's talk about 2024 heading into this right now. We're hearing a lot of very positive numbers on Kamala Harris. A lot of those are national polls, though. I try to focus more on the swing state polls. I think they're, you know, what we really need to be looking at right now. But in the article that that I read here, What You're Not Hearing About Trump's Resilience Versus Harris, as told by a pollster, which was on the dailywire.com, the word resilience is interesting.
Yeah, what I learned in 2022 in the midterm, because we were involved in a lot of congressional races and statewide governors and other races in tough states like Oregon and Washington and California and places where you wouldn't think Republicans could win. And in a lot of those polls, it showed the Republican candidate ahead from a margin perspective. So that would mean, for example, you know, the Republicans at 47, Democrats at 45. So you would normally read a poll and say that candidate has a 2-point lead. But what happened is on election day is almost every one of those Republican candidates got almost to the 0.1% the ballot share that we had projected in the final poll for them, but they didn't get anybody else. So therefore they didn't cross the majority or plurality threshold. And so one thing that really taught me was you can't just focus on the net margin. You've got to focus on the ballot shares. And if you look at Trump's ballot share through everything that's gone on and probably the most wild 40 days in American political modern history, at least, that his share has stayed pretty steady. And if anything, he's actually solidified what we call the definite vote versus just the probably vote, which are normally combined together to give you the total ballot share. So that's why I made that comment about his ballot share being resilient. And, you know, does that mean he has a ceiling? Maybe every candidate has a ceiling at some point because of fundamentals of races and personalities and other things. So that doesn't bother me at all.
Now, when we think about that in terms of Trump's voters are with him and they're solid and they're sticking with him, how does it work for Kamala Harris right now? I mean, she's the Democrat nominee, but has she locked down her party? Are they skeptical of her? What are they saying?
You ever seen the movie Cocaine Bear? When his bear finds cocaine? That's basically Kamala Harris's campaign right now, the bear that found cocaine. And what goes up must come down. I mean, I've been working in politics for almost 20 years. I've been doing polling for over 12 years. And no race shifts this fast with just a change in media coverage. And there's another thing to take into account, which is non-response bias. And that kind of goes to the shy Trump voter where somebody just chooses not to take a poll and then vote for Donald Trump. When you have these major events, especially in Democrats, they tend to be the most finicky. When they get excited, they start answering polls a whole lot more. And if the pollster does not account for those things and their numbers, you see these wild swings. But like there's no way, and I think it was maybe the New York Times Siena poll that had a 9 or 11 point swing in Arizona. Arizona does not swing 11 points. No state swings 11 points in a couple months by just changing out the candidate. So when I look at surveys like that with these massive margin swings, I they're just unbelievable because it means they didn't control for this over response from a certain segment of the voting population.
And I got to say, the fact that you use the analogy, the cocaine bear analogy, is outstanding, by the way. I think that's
just
great.
Came up with it, so steal it, but also give me credit for the first three times you use it.
We'll give you credit for it in the podcast. I'll tell you that, Brent Buchanan. Absolutely. Brent Buchanan's with the president and founder of Signal. By the way, but just so you know, so you don't steal my idea, is I'm working on a movie called White House Cocaine Dogs, which is all about the Biden's dogs sniffing Hunter's cocaine and then biting Secret Service agents. So
well,
it's going to be a huge summer
blockbuster. We don't know who brought it in there.
We don't know. But that's a really interesting point, too, about the enthusiasm to want to answer phones and take part in polls. We talk about the shy Trump voter. What about the Trump voter who doesn't want to be called a racist or sexist, so they just don't want to deal with a pollster?
You know, I think that was probably definitely the case in 16, somewhat the case in 20. I don't think it's the case anymore. I think when they tried to assassinate the guy, that kind of took away. And we saw a strong increase in his very favorable number. When I was talking about intensity on the ballot, we also track intensity on somebody's image, their favorable and unfavorable view with voters. And that has jumped and stayed. And so I think the way I read that, and then some of it may be postulation, is just that he has strengthened those folks who were scared to say they're voting for him and they're no longer scared.
That's good. I mean, that's important, too. All right. And then what about the when you get a pollster, your pollster, you get somebody on the phone and they say they're voting for Harris. Then you start asking them questions and you can tell that they're lying to you because they say the country's on the wrong track or the country's a mess and all the other things. So, I mean, for me, as somebody who's been in politics, I always like to read the crosstabs. I always like to, especially when they ask voters open-ended questions about things or ask the participants open-ended questions. What are you seeing in terms of how people are viewing the economy? And are they tying Kamala Harris to this, or is her campaign successful in playing this game of, hey, I just showed up, I had nothing to do with this?
I don't think they're tying her to the poor perceived economy yet. And you're starting to see this effort from the Trump campaign to make that tie. But, you know, they're going up against the headwind of a media that's 90% positive for Kamala and 90% negative for Donald Trump. And so everything Trump does is going to do through earned media or paid media. And, you know, the challenge with that is that she's doing a really good job deflecting that she's ever even stepped foot in the White House. And
right.
I live right by, my office is right by the White House. I can tell you she didn't come in until 10 o'clock and she leaves at 2 or 3 because I can hear her motorcade going back to the Naval Observatory. But all that being said, I do think if you look at these lower information voters, they're just disaffected in general. We did a study, and you can find it on our website, cygm.al, about this ticked off diverse young working class subset of voters that have been the group that's been moving towards Republicans. And this audience they just don't pay as much attention, but they definitely know who's in control of the White House, and it's Democrats. And so I think at the end of the day, it's not going to be even just as much about Kamala and you know, whoever they're trying to turn her into and ignore her entire past and everything she's ever said. I think they're going to say, you know what, Democrats have been in control and my life sucks. And so I'm going to give the Republicans. And if it happens to be Trump, then it happens to be Trump.
What kind of a boost can people expect you'll get from this convention this week?
You know, I would say right now on Monday before it officially starts that it would be kind of tough to go any higher than they've already gone. But, you know, I also have the theory of, you know, maybe this is from growing up in Alabama, that cock of the walk today, feather duster tomorrow. And you don't necessarily want to jump this fast, this hard with nothing, no reason to support it about you. It's just you're not the other guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, everything you're saying, Brett, makes perfect sense. I think the thing that we haven't yet figured out in this whole equation is the impact on that early voting begins in like 30 days, you know, and they're trying to do this Hollywood style campaign, and they're trying to do big glossy ads and very well produced TV commercials, and that they're trying to run the clock out here before people realize who she really is and have time to tie her to the Democrats really being in charge of everything. So this is new for us, right? We've never had this before. Yeah. Where you've replaced a candidate this close to the general election.
Yeah, I mean, for the party who wants to protect against threats to democracy, it's amazing they subverted it.
What do you mean? You mean their nominee didn't get one single primary vote and that's a problem?
Yeah, which is almost how well she did in 2020.
Well, listen, I appreciate you being here. It's an excellent point about Trump's resiliency and his voters. And then the other point, too, last question for you, I want to ask you, Brent Buchanan. Registered voters versus likely voters when you're doing polls and the significance of the two.
Yeah, I don't pay any attention to registered voters except
good.
Maybe
neither
a year
I.
out. It's likely voters, and then you got to be really careful as to what somebody considers a likely voter and what that universe looks like. I mean, there was a poll that came out maybe 10 days ago that had Kamala way up, and if you went and looked at who the participants in the survey voted for in 2020, it was Biden plus 10, and Biden only won the nation by 4.5%. So the poll was instantly at least 5.5% off by looking at that one factor, what they considered a likely voter.
Right, right. Yeah, no, great stuff. Listen, man, we'd love to get you back on the show. Follow Brent on X at, it's, you know what, Brent, tell us your Twitter handle.
It's Brent Buck.
Brent Buck,
B-R-E-N-T-B-U-C, yep.
And do you give more wisdoms, more things like the cock analogy and other things on your social media?
You know, I'm getting it. My comms team has said, be edgy. And so I don't mind doing that at all.
Good, man. I like it. Be edgy indeed. All right, Brent, thanks for joining us. And check out their website, CYGN is where you go for Signal. I appreciate
AL.
Your time.
Yep.
.al. Thank you, buddy.
It's
Thank
the
you.
5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Scioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
That's right. We're going to be there live for our next show on Friday, September 6th. So join us for that. It's going to be a blast. We're going to have an amazing time. I'd love for you to be part of it. Friday, September 6th at my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, for our first official live show of the fall season. All right. It's going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you come out and see us for that. I wanted to play this clip for you. This is, we got a lot of great audio here. We're live at the Democrat National Convention. It is night number one. So tonight, Kamala Harris will not be speaking, but Joe Biden will. So the incumbent president of the United States of America is going to come out and speak tonight on the first night of the convention. Talk about a prime speaking slot, right? A prime speaking slot. This is an important point. This is a woman with 24 years of experience in the housing industry. So we talked a lot about the food prices. Talked a lot about the impact on these price gouging laws and what they'll do to grocery stores, what they'll do to the supply and demand in the food marketplace. What about housing? I've told you before, the number one thing you want to do, and we talked about this earlier with Kat Kamik, Congresswoman Kat Kamik, if you want to actually see more housing in this country, you get rid of regulations. Regulations are the biggest impediment to new housing, and they are the biggest cost for homemakers. Regulations. Now, I know when you hear that, you go, wait. But we got to make sure the roof's safe. We got to make sure that there's fire codes and everything else. There are so many regulations outside of just the safety that I'm talking about. Most of them happen to be environmental regulations. Shocking, I know. Where you can develop, where you can build. That also drives up the cost of things. And since the government has meddled in where you can actually put homes, or whether or not you can expand homes, or whether or not you can build developments in certain places, since the government's meddled in that, you also have another supply issue as well. So the Democrats' big plan is to come along and to put affordable housing units together. Oh, that sounds like a great idea. In theory, yes, let's build affordable housing. Let's do it. So a woman with 24 years of experience in the housing industry slams Kamala Harris's Marxist-style housing plan. She's a realtor, Leah Thomas Brown. And her tweet on this, where she spoke, went viral over the weekend. And I wanted you to take a listen to some of this, because I think it's really important to hear her take on this. Cut number 8.
The Kamala Harris-Tim Walz campaign is unveiling a housing plan today. As a housing expert, someone who's been in the business for 24 years, owns my own firm, and has been heavily involved in policy issues at all levels of government, I felt obligated to bring y'all some viewpoint on what's going to be rolled out, especially since I seriously doubt that the National Association of Realtors is going to make commentary on a presidential campaign's policy. The first item you're going to see talked about is a wonderful plan to call for the construction of 3 million new housing units. Now, that does sound good, and I agree, but it's good to have conversation about the fact that our supply is the problem, not so much demand. However, couched in that wonderful little headline is a real problem, friends, because their goal is to have the federal government take over zoning. Zoning should only be under local control. Cabarrus County, North Carolina, where I am, is wildly different than Mecklenburg County right next door. And frankly, we don't have the foggiest idea what's best for Syracuse, New York, or Kansas City, Missouri, or even Kansas City,
Kansas. Let me just stop it right there real quick, Jim. Just pause it if you could. Let's think about zoning laws, too, and how when you have blue areas, they have some of the strictest zoning laws anywhere. And and you got to go to zoning boards, and you got to get approval, and you got to have people override that. But you also have a lot of communities that they love their zoning laws because they're able to keep their community's charm. They're able to keep the ability of that community to remain historic. You know, they'll put a historic town center in. I'm for local control. So if a town wants to do something like that, you know, have at it. And then people run for local office. And then if people don't like them, kick them out. They appoint people for the zoning board. And you got the planning board. And how the hell is the federal government going to take over that control? The answer is because Democrats believe in the top-down style of government, which is a strong federal government that controls everything. Now, between friends, we would actually call that fascism if we were allowed to say that, the F word, fascism, but that's literally what it is, where you have top-down government. That's the definition of it. You have a strong government at the top that decides everything for everybody else. And you don't have local control over things. Now, you start to see local control in communities go away more and more the more the EPA or the Interior Department or whatever else starts to meddle their heads in things like waterways and endangered species, except whales and dolphins. We don't care about them. Or birds that are shot by windmills, the deli slicers in the sky. We don't care about them either. But think about it. You and your town, you get to control the idea of whether or not there should be a historic district, whether or not the kind of businesses you want. Do you want to have businesses that have more fast food, or would you have more local coffee shops? And all that is okay, because people should be able to plan for their communities. There being the key, because what's the answer? If you don't like the way it's going, you can vote the mayor out. You can vote the town council people out. Everything in our system of government is based on the notion that you should be accountable, and you should be accountable to the people. And if the people don't like you, they should be able to get rid of you. How do you get rid of bureaucrats in Washington who are meddling in zoning laws? How do you think, really, truly, knowing the way that the bureaucracy works, if the left has their way, do you think they'll make it easier or harder with regulations for them to be able to build more housing? What do you think? I mean, come on, what do you think? Do you think? I remember I was in a meeting once, a true story, when Obama was president, and we were talking about construction of a bridge. And he put out all this money, and he wanted this bridge, these bridges and roads to be built. It was called the, you remember what the name of that was? The American Recovery Act, or whatever it was back then. But all this money was put out for bridges and roads, right? Infrastructure. They wanted infrastructure. So there was this bridge that was about 150 years old in New Jersey and needed to be replaced. Well, wouldn't you know, that the United States Fish and Game were in the room with the United States EPA, along with people from the Department of the Interior. This is just the federal people. Then you have the state people there. And the entire time they're all going on about some stupid mussel shell that was found at the base of the foot of the bridge or whatever. And I remember being in that meeting and I actually said, your boss, the President of the United States, wants these bridges replaced. And you're here sitting in here dragging your feet on this project. You're telling us this bridge is unsafe because you have the DOT people in the room. The DOT people in the room saying, you know, we really shouldn't be having anyone drive over this bridge. It could collapse imminently. All right, so we're going to worry. We're not going to worry about that because we might have found a mussel shell in the water. And the fish and game people are worried that the tributary might have some endangered mollusk or something like that. So we're going to hold this up now to do another study for another year. This is how the government operates. And the more the federal government's involved and the local and state is out of the picture, the more you have nonsense like this occur. And this nonsense occurs all the time. All right, let's continue a little bit more of this clip, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Universal housing market, there is no universal housing plan. If the federal government gets to take over zoning, friends, here's what that looks like. That means that you may have a parcel of land that you would like to develop, and the federal government says yes or no as to what you can do. I don't like giving the federal government any control when this country was built to make sure that every zip code could have its own personality and its own leadership. So yes, we need new housing, but not at the expense of local controls. The second thing being proposed is, of course, rent control. And that sounds good if you're in a rental and you feel like you're paying too much. Friends, the way that you solve the high cost of rent is to add more rental units, but not rental units by hedge funds, which has been the plan for the last few years. What we need are more mom-and-pop investors that are able to make local decisions about zoning and local decisions about their land so they can provide more units. When you put in rent controls, that caps what I as a landlord can charge for rent. That sounds okay if you're the consumer, but friends, it's been tried in all kinds of markets, all kinds of cities, and it does not work.
Now, Javier Milei, who's the new president of Argentina, just got rid of rent controls, and guess what? They're building new apartments and new housing. Rent controls drive up prices. That's right. So if you put in a cap on how high rent can go, that means then that there's no incentive for people to what? Ever leave that apartment. So you have less supply because people are not going to other places. Why would they? You've capped the amount the rent can go up. Why would they leave that apartment? And again, why would you build new apartments when you know that there's only so much you can charge? And you can't charge more as the prices increase. So the government meddles, and then you have less housing. What's also interesting is that individual landowners, not even just towns and communities, what they have to go through in order to simply build on their own property. Sometimes it's almost humorous, as author James DeLong explains in his book, Property Matters. This was the case for one landowner in Pacific Grove, California, who wished to build a home on a 1.1-acre lot on the Monterey Peninsula. All right, beautiful peninsula. In order to have his building plans approved, he was required to attend 20-plus public hearings and attend 20-plus architectural board meetings as well, and get the approval of the Architectural Review Board, the Planning Commission, the City Council, and the California Coastal Commission. According to the records, this process took over 3 years and cost over $600,000. During one of the dozens of hearings held regarding this property, an Architectural Review Board member said, quote, "In my former life as a seagull, I was flying up and down the California coastline and saw your house built shaped as a seashell. And because his house plan did not match the seashell-shaped house this board member envisioned in her previous life as a bird, she voted against approving any of the plans." From Rand Paul's book, Government Bullies. True story. In my former life, I was a seagull, and I saw your house shaped like a seashell, and I wanted to poop on it. And since your house is not shaped like a seashell, I'm not approving this. These are the crazy people that get involved. Now, the higher you go, the more you get lunatics like this involved. And we haven't even got into the federal government. Don't forget, under the Obama administration, they had the WOTUS Act, Waters of the United States Act. So if you had any water in your property, because all drains lead to the ocean, kid, which we learned from Finding Nemo, well, now they had reason to step in and deal with that as well. So you've got layers upon layers of layers in dealing with bureaucrats when you even want to just simply build a home on property. They put in all kinds of environmental restrictions to enable you so that you can't build. Think about trying to build in the Pine Barrens in South Jersey, for example, or the Skylands region of North Jersey, where they put in all kinds of restrictions. You have to be X number of feet away from a tributary. You've got to make sure that your home has X amount of cover in the backyard so that the rain and really, there are people right now in their own towns who can't take trees down in their own backyard. There is a story in the Wall Street Journal of a couple that poisoned their neighbor's trees to get a better view of the ocean. Now, that may be a little bit extreme, but I know people who've done that just to kill trees in their own backyard that were dying, but weren't dying fast enough for the town. And they would say to them, you know, when a storm comes through here, we have gigantic branches that fall and they could hurt my little children. And the town said, we don't care. That tree has to stay. Now, the good thing is that if it's a town, you can vote those bums out. But when it's a state doing it or the feds doing it and you don't have enough cover in your backyard for stormwater runoff and blah, 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 so you can't add an addition to your house or put a pool in your backyard, that's what you're dealing with. And you get the federal government involved in this, this is going to take on a whole life of its own. 855-839-1210 on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli, if you would like to weigh in on everything we are discussing today as we are live from the Democrat National Convention. Definitely not my happy place, but I'm happy that the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey is sponsoring this happy hour and very happy that we will be back. We'll be back for our next live show on Friday, September 6th, and it's going to be amazing. We're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time there. So mark your calendar today, Friday, September 6th, for our next live show. And you remember earlier how I was explaining to you that for a lot of people, they want a different kind of experience when they're shopping. Sometimes they want a more luxurious experience. That's what you get at Cherry Hill Volvo. You know, there's a lot of big chain dealerships out there, but a lot of people don't want to deal with that. You know, where people are trained, if someone walks on the lot, you sell them a car no matter what, and they just wear you down until you want to scream uncle. And you know what I'm talking about there. Cherry Hill Volvo is not that place. Cherry Hill Volvo, you get a luxury buying experience that is personalized to you. And there's no pressure. You know, I have friends who went there before they bought their XC90. They went there 5 or 6 times to see the car. That doesn't happen at these big chain dealerships where, you know, the salespeople are trained in a certain way and you're not leaving. You know, you're not leaving without that car. That's not how it works at Cherry Hill Volvo. If the car's not right for you, the car's not right for you. It's a guiding principle because everything they do there is based on that principle of doing the right thing. And the result is that so many of their customers, like me, become customers for life. Cherry Hill Volvo has customers who have been with them for as long as 30 years. That's an incredible testament to the high level of service and value they provide. And it's possible to get the absolute best deal on a new Volvo while enjoying fantastic experience at Cherry Hill Volvo. For example, they're offering a $15,000 discount on the lease of any in-stock 2024 XC90 hybrid. Or qualified buyers can lease the incredible C40 for 36 months for less than $500 a month. Cherry Hill Volvo is the most accessible Volvo dealer to Philly and South Jersey, right across the bridge. Judith, Yosef, and the entire team look forward to meeting you and giving you that incredible experience. Now remember, the Zeoli car is the XC90. It's what we drive. But I've driven all the Volvos. I've had the privilege of driving just about every model they have. The S-Class, made right here in South Carolina. The XC40, the XC60, two great midsize SUVs with all the latest technology bells and whistles, safety to the core, and super fast and reliable. So no matter what, at Cherry Hill Volvo, you're going to have an incredible experience because you're treated right. The small family-owned experience that I was talking about earlier, that's what you get at Cherry Hill Volvo. Not a big chain, a family dealership has been since Judith's father founded the dealership. Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter.
Thanks for listening to the Zeoli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
We're not putting in price controls to go after price gouging, I should say. We're not doing that. They're not really price controls. They're already trying to walk it back because of all the criticism that they've gotten, and they've gotten a lot of criticism from this. But an example of this, of what they're trying to do right now by gaslighting all of us, is to tell us that it's not really about price controls. It's really not that. So let me cue up for you. This is now the governor of Michigan. We'll cue up cut number 9. People are reading too much into this. The price gouging plan specifics. This is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria. VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaVanaria, VanariaDental.com. People are reading too much into the price gouging plan specifics, all right? So this is just Kristen Welker begins with an op-ed that was written by an Obama administration economist about how disastrous this would be. Remember, you had the far-right wing Washington Post come out against this. You had an Obama economist come out against this. You had several others come out against this, too, who said this is nonsense. You had a Biden economist come out and say this is crazy, this is nonsense. Because it is nonsense, and it would lead to so many problems for this economy. But here's the governor of Michigan trying to downplay all this. Again, this is what's called gaslighting. You know, your husband comes home stinking like a strip club, but tells you it's fine, it's nothing bad. And you go, did you get a lap dance? I didn't get a lap dance. I had a dance, but it was not on my lap. And you go, was it a private dance in the back room? You go, no, just a dance in the vicinity. And you go, would you just be honest? Stop with the dodging of the, you know. But this is what people do when they don't want to get in trouble. They try to dodge and deflect, and then ultimately they go, look, a cat! And then they distract you and they just run away and stop talking. Well, this is Gretchen Whitmer's cat moment here. Take a listen.
Among other things, she's proposing a ban on price gouging. Here is what Obama administration economist Jason Furman had to say. He said, quote, this is not sensible policy. And I think the biggest hope is that it ends up being a lot of rhetoric and not reality. There's no upside here. And there is some downside. He warned effectively that price controls could ultimately stifle economic growth. So do you think that's the best way to bring down prices in Michigan?
Well, I think people are reading too much into what has been put out there.
They're reading too much. Even CNN got in on the action with Elizabeth Buchwald writing that Harris's plan to stop price gouging could create more problems than it solves. Well, you're reading too much into this, you people. You're reading too much into this. And they write here that there's just one issue about her proposal. It could create more problems than the one it's trying to solve. Gavin Roberts studied anti-price gouging laws some states passed during the pandemic. One of the biggest effects he observed, especially at grocery stores, was that those laws motivated people to go buy goods more than they would if prices had risen. I talked about this earlier with you. The same thing, Mama's Yoli's up one checkout lane and Papa's Yoli's out the other. And they're both buying more stuff than they probably needed at the time. Nobody actually pays attention to limits on toilet paper. They just find ways to get whatever they need. But prices keep things in check. So you wind up only buying what you need versus stocking up, which then leaves less for other people. This is how a normal functioning economy works. It's why prices should reflect supply and demand, not artificially created by the government. When prices are high, in most cases, the best policy action response is actually taking no action. He's the chair of Weber State University's economic department. That would cause consumers who are deterred to say, you know, buy high prices of beef, to instead purchase another type of protein. That helps keep beef on the grocery store shelves for people who want it enough to pay the higher prices. So a good analogy is this. You know, we've got 3 kids. And for us, ground beef goes a long way. We can buy the big family pack of ground beef at Costco or Wegmans or whatever, and we can make tacos out of it. We can do lasagna out of it. We can stretch that for a few days. I buy a couple steaks. It's first of all going to cost me a lot. My kids don't like steak, so I make certain choices based on that fact. For some people, ground beef is what they can do, but they can't afford ground beef, so then they go buy maybe they buy chicken. Whatever it is, they make. But if the government comes in and says ground beef can only cost so much, and so then everybody can now suddenly afford it, well, guess what? There's no ground beef. So then it's gone because there's nothing to keep the demand in check. It's gone. And while Harris claims her proposal will help the food industry become more competitive, Roberts said it would do just the opposite. Quote, it's more likely to maintain that status quo because it would keep new competition from moving in to take advantage of the bigger profit margins. Competition that could have helped lower prices in the long run. Jason Furman, a top economist in the Obama administration, shared Roberts' view that the anti-price gouging laws could inadvertently harm consumers. Quote, this is not sensible policy, and I think the biggest hope is that it ends up being a lot of rhetoric and no reality. There's no upside here, and there is downside. Instead of pursuing anti-price gouging policies, he recommended that Harris investigate what, if anything, is stopping new parties from entering concentrated industries. To his point, a campaign fact sheet said that Harris also plans to make more resources available for the federal government to identify and take on price fixing and other anti-competitive practices in the food and grocery industries. Those things don't happen. There is not a secret cabal of grocery store heads who all get a secret phone call every day and decide how much you're going to charge. And then they all charge the same thing. Because in an economy, somebody else will come along and say, oh, okay, I'm on the Zoom call and I'm on mute. I go, all right, well, everybody's going to charge this for water. I'll charge 30% less and everybody will come to my store. That's how it works in a free market economy. Everybody knows that, except idiots who don't understand how the economy works. Campaign staff declined to comment on critiques of Harris's proposed price gouging ban, pointing CNN to Harris's speech and the fact sheet she shared ahead of the event. The jury is still out, CNN writes, as to the extent to which price gouging has contributed to inflation over the last few years. Because it hasn't, because price gouging is a lie. Think of what the term implies. I know she called it price gouging, but think about what the term price gouging implies. It implies that people are artificially raising prices above what they should be, and that there's no market factors in affecting that whatsoever. Nothing. Nothing else. So, in order for that to occur, there's no other reason other than just what? Greed. And this is what our campaign's hoping for. That you'll go, those greedy, greedy grocery store heads. Oh, that greedy, greedy beef industry. But the beef industry has to feed their cows. And what if the price of feed for their cows has also gone up? How do they adjust for that? Now they're paying more. And as gas prices go up, the price of feed goes up. Gas and energy prices, I have news for you, drive a lot of this. So then what happens then when the guy who's driving the beef to the grocery store is charging more to the distributor than he normally did because his gas prices have gone up? How do you reflect that in a marketplace? You adjust prices accordingly so you can still make money. That's what we talked about. And if you can't make money, how do you expect a smaller competitor to come in? Really, how do you expect that? So you know what the result is? You get more gigantic, big agricultural companies because they're the only ones who can absorb the other price increases. No, really, how does a small mom-and-pop farm compete with that? They don't have the resources to be able to sustain the changes in the marketplace that could affect them. Research from the San Francisco Federal Reserve suggests alleged corporate price gouging was not a primary catalyst for the inflation surge that began in 2021. While progressive-leaning think tanks have published research that suggests there's a more direct link. What does that research show? Until late last year, companies routinely said on their quarterly earnings calls with investors that customers continued to pay for goods even as businesses hiked prices. That's because demand stayed high, fueled by bigger paychecks and pandemic stimulus that had padded savings accounts. So many economists contend corporate profits were juiced by that thing you learned at Econ 101, supply and demand, not corporate greed. This is CNN writing this. Far right-wing CNN. In any event, the inflation Americans have had to contend with over the past few years is the product of a confluence of events that include the war in Ukraine, government spending, and pandemic-related disruptions across the economy. The unprecedented stress on supply chains in the thick of the pandemic, for example, contributed significantly to inflation's rise in early 2021. You know, the trillions of dollars that have been spent. Look, I know the Fed plays a huge role in this, and I'm not dumb on that point. I've made that point to you before. The Fed and all their monetary easing nonsense contributed greatly to inflation, no doubt about it, but so did government spending. And then when you give people money, and people think, I got all this cash now, you've again, what have you done? You've injected something into the marketplace. So people go out and they don't care about prices because now they've got free government money. So prices aren't a concern to them. But the demand is there because now they've got money in their pockets and they want to buy a lot of things. So in order to keep up with demand and you've got limited supply, the cost of the supply goes up. It's not that complicated. And the Harris proposal has some supporters. Lindsay Owens, executive director of Groundwork Collaborative, a progressive think tank. You know, think tanks, for the most part, are people that have never actually been in the real world. Most people in think tanks have never been in the real world, have actually run a business or had to make a profit, for example. She says, I definitely don't think that the price gouging statute will result in shortages, she said, adding that it would give government agencies like the Federal Trade Commission more authority to crack down on bad actors, charging consumers higher prices. It's good to see this aggressive approach, the liberal think tank wrote. How good. Yeah, give the FTC more power to meddle in prices. That's going to make a huge positive impact, isn't it? This is what we're dealing with right now. This is Kamala Harris's economy. This is her economic plan. Now, the next thing that's going to come, mortgage forgiveness. Oh, yeah. Why not? They forgave student loan debt. Why not forgive mortgages, too? Her plan to make housing more affordable via subsidies will raise prices and create more moral hazard. Alyssa Finley writing this for the Wall Street Journal. The plan goes as follows. Subsidize Americans to take out bigger mortgages. If they can't pay them, no worries. Ms. Harris will simply waive the payments away. The Biden administration is already doing this on student loan debt. And part of the reason why prices have grown at more than twice the overall inflation rate since the start of the pandemic is because the government has given mortgage forgiveness. About 70% of single-family mortgages are guaranteed by federal agencies or government-sponsored enterprises such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are regulated by the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Ms. Harris wouldn't need Congress to subsidize home buyers. The Obama and Biden administrations have done so merely by easing credit standards and reducing cost to borrowers for government-backed mortgages. Now, when you lower standards for borrowers, there's also another impact that happens, which is that people matter.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
We're not putting in price controls to go after price gouging, I should say. We're not doing that. They're not really price controls. They're already trying to walk it back because of all the criticism that they've gotten, and they've gotten a lot of criticism from this. But an example of this, of what they're trying to do right now by gaslighting all of us, is to tell us that it's not really about price controls. It's really not that. So let me cue up for you. This is now the governor of Michigan. We'll cue up cut number 9. People are reading too much into this. The price gouging plan specifics. This is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria. VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. People are reading too much into the price gouging plan specifics, all right? So this is Kristen Welker begins with an op-ed that was written by an Obama administration economist about how disastrous this would be. Remember, you had the far right wing Washington Post come out against this. You had an Obama economist come out against this. You had several others come out against this, too, who said this is nonsense. You had a Biden economist come out and say this is crazy, this is nonsense. Because it is nonsense, and it would lead to so many problems for this economy. But here's the governor of Michigan trying to downplay all this. Again, this is what's called gaslighting. You know, your husband comes home stinking like a strip club, but tells you it's fine. It's nothing bad. And you go, did you get a lap dance? I didn't get a lap dance. I had a dance, but it was not on my lap. And you go, was it a private dance in the back room? You go, no. Just a dance in the vicinity of it. You go, would you just be honest? Just be honest. Like, stop with the dodging of the, you know. But this is what people do when they don't want to get in trouble. They try to dodge and deflect, and then ultimately they go, look, a cat. And then they distract you and they just run away and stop talking. Well, this is Gretchen Whitmer's cat moment here. Take a listen.
Among other things, she's proposing a ban on price gouging. Here is what Obama administration economist Jason Furman had to say. He said, quote, this is not sensible policy. And I think the biggest hope is that it ends up being a lot of rhetoric and not reality. There's no upside here. And there is some downside. He warned effectively that price controls could ultimately stifle economic growth. So do you think that's the best way to bring down prices in Michigan?
Well, I think people are reading too much into what has been put out there.
They're reading too much. Even CNN got in on the action with Elizabeth Buchwald writing that Harris's plan to stop price gouging could create more problems than it solves. Well, you're reading too much into this, you people. You're reading too much into this. And they write here that there's just one issue about her proposal. It could create more problems than the one it's trying to solve. Gavin Roberts studied anti-price gouging laws some states passed during the pandemic. One of the biggest effects he observed, especially at grocery stores, was that those laws motivated people to go buy goods more than they would if prices had risen. I talked about this earlier with you. The same thing, Mama Zioli's at one checkout lane and Papa Zioli's at the other. And they're both buying more stuff than they probably needed at the time. Nobody actually pays attention to limits on toilet paper. They just find ways to get whatever they need. But prices keep things in check. So you wind up only buying what you need versus stocking up, which then leaves less for other people. This is how a normal functioning economy works. It's why prices should reflect supply and demand, not artificially created by the government. When prices are high, in most cases, the best policy action response is actually taking no action. He's the chair of Weber State University's economic department. That would cause consumers who are deterred to, say, you know, buy high prices of beef, to instead purchase another type of protein. That helps keep beef on the grocery store shelves for people who want it enough to pay the higher prices. So a good analogy is this. You know, we've got three kids. And for us, ground beef goes a long way. We can buy the big family pack of ground beef at Costco or Wegmans or whatever, and we can make tacos out of it. We can do lasagna out of it. We can stretch that for a few days. I buy a couple steaks. It's first of all going to cost me a lot. My kids don't like steak, so I make certain choices based on that fact. For some people, ground beef is what they can do, but they can't afford ground beef, so then they go buy maybe they buy chicken. Whatever it is, they make. But if the government comes in and says ground beef can only cost so much, and so then everybody can now suddenly afford it, well, guess what? There's no ground beef. So then, it's gone. It's gone because there's nothing to keep the demand in check. It's gone. And while Harris claims her proposal will help the food industry become more competitive, Roberts said it would do just the opposite. Quote: "It's more likely to maintain that status quo." Because it would keep new competition from moving in to take advantage of the bigger profit margins. Competition that could have helped lower prices in the long run. Jason Furman, a top economist in the Obama administration, shared Roberts' view that the anti-price gouging laws could inadvertently harm consumers. Quote, this is not sensible policy. And I think the biggest hope is that it ends up being a lot of rhetoric and no reality. There's no upside here, and there is downside. Instead of pursuing anti-price gouging policies, he recommended that Harris investigate what, if anything, is stopping new parties from entering concentrated industries. To his point, a campaign fact sheet said that Harris also plans to make more resources available for the federal government to identify and take on price fixing and other anti-competitive practices in the food and grocery industries. Those things don't happen. There is not a secret cabal of grocery store heads who all get a secret phone call every day and decide how much you're going to charge. And then they all charge the same thing. Because in an economy, somebody else will come along and say, oh, okay, I'm on the Zoom call and I'm on mute. I go, all right, well, everybody's going to charge this for water. I'll charge 30% less. And everybody will come to my store. That's how it works in a free market economy. Everybody knows that, except idiots who don't understand how the economy works. Campaign staff declined to comment on critiques of Harris's proposed price gouging ban, pointing CNN to Harris's speech and the fact sheet she shared ahead of the event. The jury is still out, CNN writes, as to the extent to which price gouging has contributed to inflation over the last few years. Because it hasn't, because price gouging is a lie. Think of what the term implies. I know she called it price gouging, but think about what the term price gouging implies. It implies that people are artificially raising prices above what they should be, and that there's no market factors in affecting that whatsoever. Nothing. Nothing else. So, in order for that to occur, there's no other reason other than just what? Greed. And this is what our campaign's hoping for. That you'll go, those greedy, greedy grocery store heads. Oh, that greedy, greedy beef industry. But the beef industry has to feed their cows. And what if the price of feed for their cows has also gone up? How do they adjust for that? Now they're paying more. And as gas prices go up, the price of feed goes up. Gas and energy prices, I have news for you, drive a lot of this. So then what happens then when the guy who's driving the beef to the grocery store is charging more to the distributor than he normally did because his gas prices have gone up? How do you reflect that in a marketplace? You adjust prices accordingly so you can still make money. That's what we talked about. And if you can't make money, how do you expect a smaller competitor to come in? Really, how do you expect that? So you know what the result is? You get more gigantic, big agricultural companies because they're the only ones who can absorb the other price increases. No, really, how does a small mom-and-pop farm compete with that? They don't have the resources to be able to sustain the changes in the marketplace that could affect them. Research from the San Francisco Federal Reserve suggests alleged corporate price gouging was not a primary catalyst for the inflation surge that began in 2021. While progressive-leaning think tanks have published research that suggests there's a more direct link. What does that research show? Until late last year, companies routinely said on their quarterly earnings calls with investors that customers continued to pay for goods even as businesses hiked prices. That's because demand stayed high, fueled by bigger paychecks and pandemic stimulus that had padded savings accounts. So many economists contend corporate profits were juiced by that thing you learned at Econ 101, supply and demand, not corporate greed. This is CNN writing this. Far right-wing CNN. In any event, the inflation Americans have had to contend with over the past few years is the product of a confluence of events that include the war in Ukraine, government spending, and pandemic-related disruptions across the economy. The unprecedented stress on supply chains in the thick of the pandemic, for example, contributed significantly to inflation's rise in early 2021. You know, the trillions of dollars that have been spent. Look, I know the Fed plays a huge role in this, and I'm not dumb on that point. I've made that point to you before. The Fed and all their monetary easing nonsense contributed greatly to inflation, no doubt about it, but so did government spending. And then when you give people money, and people think, I got all this cash now. You've, again, what have you done? You've injected something into the marketplace. So people go out and they don't care about prices because now they've got free government money. So prices aren't a concern to them. But the demand is there because now they've got money in their pockets and they want to buy a lot of things. So in order to keep up with demand and you've got limited supply, the cost of the supply goes up. It's not that complicated. And the Harris proposal has some supporters. Lindsay Owens, executive director of Groundwork Collaborative, a progressive think tank. You know, think tanks, for the most part, are people that have never actually been in the real world. Most people in think tanks have never been in the real world, have actually run a business or had to make a profit, for example. She says, I definitely don't think that the price gouging statute will result in shortages, she said, adding that it would give government agencies like the Federal Trade Commission more authority to crack down on bad actors, charging consumers higher prices. It's good to see this aggressive approach, the liberal think tank wrote. How good. Yeah, give the FTC more power to meddle in prices. That's going to make a huge positive impact, isn't it? This is what we're dealing with right now. This is Kamala Harris's economy. This is her economic plan. Now, the next thing that's going to come, mortgage forgiveness. Oh, yeah. Why not? They forgave student loan debt. Why not forgive mortgages, too? Her plan to make housing more affordable via subsidies will raise prices and create more moral hazard. Alyssa Finley writing this for the Wall Street Journal. The plan goes as follows. Subsidize Americans to take out bigger mortgages. If they can't pay them, no worries. Ms. Harris will simply waive the payments away. The Biden administration is already doing this on student loan debt. And part of the reason why prices have grown at more than twice the overall inflation rate since the start of the pandemic is because the government has given mortgage forgiveness. About 70% of single-family mortgages are guaranteed by federal agencies or government-sponsored enterprises such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are regulated by the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Ms. Harris wouldn't need Congress to subsidize home buyers. The Obama and Biden administrations have done so merely by easing credit standards and reducing cost to borrowers for government-backed mortgages. Now, when you lower standards for borrowers, there's also another impact that happens, which is that people who can't really afford something buy it, like a house they can't really afford. And then what happens? Eventually, they can't make their payments. And then you have a bubble that's created that goes pop. The Federal Housing Administration, which insures homes for lower-income and first-time buyers with down payments as low as 3.5%, cut mortgage premiums in 2015 and 2023. This increased buyers' purchasing power by a combined 10.5%. The feds have also enabled riskier buyers to qualify for bigger mortgages. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in 2013 effectively barred lenders from issuing mortgages to those whose total debt payments would exceed 43% of income, yet that rule exempted government-backed mortgages. So you're also going into another problem here, which is that you are enabling people to take out bigger mortgages they can't afford, riskier loans in general, and then who pays for that? You do, because don't forget what the administration did. They added a little VIG on your mortgage, where you have to help subsidize the idiots who can't make their bills on time. That's right. Meanwhile, Fannie and Freddie have allowed buyers to take out mortgages with down payments as low as 3%, harking back to the bubble days of the mid-2000s. Personal gifts, lender assistance, and government grants can count toward the amount. Some lenders are letting buyers take out second mortgages to make down payments. You are creating a debt tsunami, is what you're doing here. The reported improvements in homebuyers' credit scores offer little consolation. Three-fourths of recently delinquent Fannie and Freddie homeowners have good or better credit scores. Call it grade inflation for credit scores. Now, a series of events have led homebuyers to appear more creditworthy on paper. They play those games, too. Credit bureaus have removed most medical debt from reports since 2022. Mm-hmm. So think about that for a moment. You have medical debt, which is debt. The debt you owe, but they take it off the docket so that it doesn't appear to be actual real debt, so that you seem like you have more money than you really do. But that's okay. They're going to forgive medical debt too. They just wipe it off the books. You just write it off. It's like Kramer and Seinfeld. You just write it off and it goes away. That's what they want to do. Okay. We are live at the Democrat National Convention. Got a big fourth and final hour coming up straight ahead for you, but I want to tell you about my friends at NJ Diet, because NJ Diet's going to help you lose weight, real weight, real fast, too, within 40 days' time. I know what it's like. The summer, you go, you eat a little bit more, vacation, ice cream with the kids. It's okay, but you want to make sure you keep that weight off, right? Well, that's what NJ Diet's going to do for you. You're going to be guaranteed to lose 20 to 40-plus pounds in only 40 days with NJDiet.com. Now, you will lose the weight guaranteed with no shots, no hormones, no surgery, and no prepackaged foods, just all natural. And you don't want to do those shots anyway. They're banned in a lot of European countries. There's all kinds of side effects, and you got to use them the rest of your life. Besides, NJ Diet works faster. There's a location close by you, King of Prussia, Cherry Hill, Princeton, and Newark, Delaware. Or live, online, with virtual consultations at NJDiet.com. Call them today and get started. I know you've been thinking about this, but trust me, the people who I know that have done this have all said to me, Rich, it works, and I kept the weight off. NJDiet.com is where you go. Or 855 5-NJ-DIET, 855-5-NJ-DIET. You will lose the weight, 20 to 40-plus pounds, guaranteed in only 40 days' time. So what are you waiting for? You can do this, and NJ Diet can help. NJDiet.com.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT. and on the Free Odyssey app.